This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name is Daryl Ong, and you're tuned in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. And for the next 2 weeks, we'll be recounting our favourite features and stories of 2018. This week, the story of our very own bodybuilding world champion, Lilian Tan, whom we had on the show in January. A bodybuilder by chance, Lilian started lifting weights back in 1997 while she was studying in the US. An avid swimmer, she started hitting the gym coincidentally when her regular swimming pool closed for maintenance. Fast forward a few years and stuck with the bodybuilding bug. Her first ever competition was the Miss San Diego Bodybuilding Championship in 2001, which she came in second. Over the years, and with countless bodybuilding medals under her belt, her biggest achievement has to be winning gold at the World Bodybuilding and Physique Sport Championship in 2012, making her the first Malaysian woman to do so. She defended her title in 2014, 2016, and recently, just this month in Chiang Mai, she won her fourth world title. On the show today, Lilian shares her trials and tribulations in her journey and proves to us that bodybuilding is no longer predominantly a male sport.
I just wanted to, you know, lose some weight and, you know, look good in clothes. So that was it. And my passion was in swimming. So by the end of the 2 weeks, the salesperson came up to me and goes, "So, we see you here every day. Do you want to join?" I was coming up with excuses every day. I forgot my checkbook. I forgot my credit card. I had no intention to join. And I figured, okay, it's only $12 a month. If I don't come in and use the gym, at least I could, you know, maybe shower in the gym, because right. It was midpoint from home to school, school and home. So I ended up signing up for that, and the swimming pool took a lot longer than 3 weeks to be completed. So in fact, it stretched till almost 2 months later before the completion was done.
Okay.
So by then, I was already, already built that habit of going to the gym, doing my cardiovascular exercise, and I actually lost quite a bit of weight.
So when did weightlifting come into the picture?
So what happened was, when I lost that weight, I was associating my weight loss to my fat loss. So I was surprised because my body fat percentage stayed the same, pretty much the same, even though, you know, the scale is showing quite a dramatic decrease in, you know, in poundages. I remember the doctor at that time who took the body fat test told me, "Well, you need to start putting on lean muscle, and that's the only way that you can get your body fat to drop." Mm. I said, "Well, how do you do that?" "Well, you have to start lifting weights." And that didn't sit well with me. I mean, you know, having muscle, that was not what I wanted. So the gym at that time had what we call just like floor trainers. They're not personal trainers. They call them just floor trainers where anybody can come in. They'll just show you a circuit workout, and you pretty much do this on your own every day. Okay. Just come in, do the same thing, and there's a chart. You record what you do, and you can track your progress if you're getting stronger. So I did that, and after a month later, I was noticing that, you know, I'm starting
bulging.
To put muscle on.
Right.
I remember brushing my teeth and I was checking out my arms. I'm like, "I think I have a bicep coming out," you know. And that was kind of how the whole thing started. And then I had friends that encouraged me along the way and said, you should do this, you know, maybe you were meant to do this." I said, "Nah, you know, I love swimming. I'm just going to stick to swimming." All it took was one person that said, "You will never have what it takes to compete."
Oh, you got triggered then.
Oh, that was a trigger point. You'll never, because, you know, getting in shape and competition is two different things. You don't have the discipline to go through that. So that was enough to say, "Okay, I'm going to prove myself."
So from that point on, you got yourself really immersed into the bodybuilding world.
Yeah.
Who were some of your idols, you know, back then?
You know, back then I looked up to Mia Finnegan. She had the body. She was lean, she had very good muscle tone, but she wasn't overly muscular, you know. I remembered Mia Finnegan and Monica Brand. They were gracing the pages and the covers of Muscle and Fitness, things like that. So I would always buy those magazines and look at them and go, wow, if only I could ever attain that kind of physique. So they were definitely my idols. And then the more muscular I got, people like female bodybuilders like Linda Murray definitely was somebody I looked up to.
Right. And at this point of time, you were bodybuilding in view of competing.
Yes. I switched from, just getting in shape to like, okay, I'm going to go out there and prove myself.
There are not many women bodybuilders, especially here in Malaysia.
Right.
How did your friends and family react when you told them you wanted to pursue it full time, pursue it competitively?
You know, I remember when I came back, I first told my dad about this. He was having lunch and he looked at me and he made fun of me. He said, "You're crazy. You know, if you think that you as a female can put on muscle, you got to be dreaming. Men have a hard time putting on muscle, and let alone you with no, lifting background. You want to be a bodybuilder?" And that's when he told me, stick to your degree. I was studying to major in business management. So stick to that. Do that. Don't waste our money that we invested in you. We sent you to the U.S. to pursue your degree in business management and not pick up bodybuilding. There was definitely no support from my family, from my friends even. They just thought, I got to be crazy. I met some of my classmates. I remembered I attended one of my classmates' wedding and they're looking at me and they were squeezing my arms. I go, this is just too much. You should just stop. It doesn't look good on a female. So, but what I learned is you got to be comfortable, comfortable with what you do. And this is what you wake up every morning and you go to sleep and this is the first and the last thing on your mind, then just do it. Do it for yourself, not for anybody else. Mm,
definitely. Back then, you had a PR in the US.
Yes, because I've stayed there for almost 2 decades.
And you actually represented US in one of the bodybuilding competitions, right?
Yeah.
Your first bodybuilding competition, in fact.
Right, that was the Natural Olympia. I had an option to, represent the country I was from, the US, and I had actually called back and spoke to Francis Yong, who was the secretary of Malaysia Bodybuilding Federation at that time, and he told me, "Look, Malaysia has banned female bodybuilding, so there's really no place for you." And after that talk, I go, okay, since I'm a permanent resident of the United States, I could represent the US, so that's why I represented the U.S. instead of Malaysia.
Mm. Tell us about your first competition. How was that like?
It was nerve-wracking. What happened was, before that competition, I was really overweight. I'm only about 158 centimeters, and I was probably about 75 to 77 kg, and that is not muscle weight. I was carrying a lot of fat. So when the new millennium turned, I just told myself, that's it. I no longer want to be in this shape. This is not what I want. I'm going to turn myself around. So I figured, committing myself to a contest would be the best way to lose weight, because otherwise...
You have a goal in mind, right?
Yeah. Otherwise, you will just take your time and, you might just... not follow through with your goal. So that was how it all started.
Mm. Tell us about the whole experience.
It was difficult because I was working 8-to-5 job, and I think I was doing another part-time job in the evening, also training people. So that means waking up extra early to cook my meals and going to the gym and get my cardio session in, showered, all that before I punch in to work at 8 o'clock. So when you work from 8-to-5, you're pretty much mentally exhausted.
Yeah, for sure.
Then you come home, it's either you train, or you train your clients first, or you train yourself first. So, and sometimes the timing is such that I can only do my training much later. So it's mentally and physically very exhausting. Plus, cooking all my meals on my own, because, when you're dieting, you really can't eat out.
All right.
So, And there are so many times where, you get so difficult and you're so tired and you just feel like, okay, I'll just cheat here and there. Nobody's going to know, you know, one cheat meal here and cheat meal there.
It's not
going to affect how I look. But, you know, once you start doing that, you know, next thing you know, you'll fall off the wagon. So it really taught me the discipline, to stick with something, no matter how difficult it is, you don't give up. You see yourself through it.
And compared to men, it's definitely more difficult for women to put on mass, right? Just because of the amount of testosterone in the body.
Yeah.
What were the major differences, you had to go through to keep up with men?
A lot of women out there and men out there, they think that they look at female bodybuilders and they think, they feel so disgusted, but I know, like for myself, I have to lift so much heavier than some of the men in my gym just to make a slight impact, in body transformation, like just to even put on a little bit of muscle. I have to really, really push myself to it. Not to say that, it's a lot. For men too, it's a little bit easier, I guess, for men compared to women. So, but you just have to work at it, and be very consistent and don't expect results soon. A lot of people, they'll go in, lift for a month and expect to look like somebody who has put in the work for, 8 to 10 years. You're just not going to get that.
So you won gold in the World Women Bodybuilding Championship, the over 55 kg category, making you the first Malaysian woman to do so.
Yeah.
You then defended your title in 2014 and 2016.
Correct.
Quite a feat. What do you think is your biggest strength when it comes to bodybuilding?
I think it's the mental strength. Physically, of course, you have to be strong, to get through the exercise. But it's the power of the mental strength that will carry you through the most difficult moments, It's not easy. People look at us and, some admire the way we look, but it's what we do behind closed doors, day in and day out. And the discipline. I will come home from training at 1-2 a.m. in the morning. You're just so tired, and the last thing you want is to get in the kitchen and start measuring your food and cooking. But as we all know, diet is so important. It plays a very, very big role in how we look and how our body transforms. So that, I think bodybuilding has taught me, to really push to the limit, not give up, because when it's times like that you can push yourself through and get through it, and that means you'll be unstoppable. So that's what it really teaches me.
Okay, let's move away from the gym and fitness and go onto the stage now.
Okay.
You're being on stage, showing your body off, all eyes are on you. I'm sure nerves come into play, right?
Yeah.
One, how do you get over that? And two, how do you keep your mental focus on stage?
When you prep early, like 16 weeks out and all that, that is one way of you prepping yourself mentally. Usually when you train this hard and you diet this hard, you almost feel like you just cannot wait to go on stage, to showcase what your hard work,
right?
For all this the year and everything leading up to it. But like for me myself, one of my weakness is showing up at the venue and then, looking at all the other competitors. You cannot help it, but you look at, your competitors, you start looking at everybody and you will know, okay, I think she's going to be my category. I think this girl looks like she's going to be in bodybuilding. No, that one looks like she's in fitness. So you start narrowing the contestants down and then you look, okay, she looks like she's going to be my category. A lot of times there are similar faces that will return, so you kind of know.
And all this is inevitable, right? You definitely make comparisons like
this. Yeah, you do in your head, because of course everybody trains to win. Everybody goes there because they want the top spot. So you'll give them that look, and they'll give you the dirty look. So you're exchanging dirty looks, and then you'll
see fights backstage.
Yeah, and then that one we haven't. The girls are a little bit more civilized.
But, oh, so but, in the mental that this happened.
You have some men that they will throw tantrums. Unfortunately, it's not very professional when they don't get the placing they want. You see them throwing the trophies, you know, things like that. You know, that just doesn't look reflect good on them.
Take us through a typical competition format. Yeah.
So what happens in a bodybuilding competition, and that is the truth also, that goes for fitness and other categories as well. We have a prejudging in the morning, which is like a preliminary round, because, you know, you're going to have quite a few contestants in the category. So it's narrowing down, picking the top five that is going to advance into the finals later in the afternoon. What we do for bodybuilding is they have a symmetry round where they check your symmetry, make sure that, you know, your upper body, lower body is balanced. They're looking for what we call the X factor, you know, the narrow waist and the V taper in your body.
Okay.
Because you don't want someone with all upper body and no legs. And then after that symmetry round, what they do is they'll start calling out all the individual poses. So, like, you know, your front double bicep pose, your side chest, your abdominal thighs, things like that. So you start posing, and what happens then is the panel of judges will judge you based on your muscularity, your symmetry, and your muscle conditioning.
And these poses you learn how to do.
Yeah, well. So we have to learn how to do this. So the prep that is leading up to the competition, aside from just, you know, training and dieting, you know, is compulsory for us to make sure that we get our posing as polished as possible on stage.
What does typically the judges base their criteria on? Is bigger better?
No, bigger is definitely not better.
Oh.
I'll tell you that because I'm never the biggest one on stage.
Okay.
You know, I'm being Asian, and, you know, usually you have the Europeans coming in, you know, with more mass on the body. But, you know, you just have to make sure that you bring in the complete package. You know, you cannot be too small because it's a bodybuilding competition. So you want to make sure you're carrying enough mass, muscle mass, but just make sure that your symmetry is always in check. And most importantly, your muscle conditioning is on point, because that is where all your separation and your lines and your striations all shows. So it's the muscle beauty that, you know, really, really brings it out together.
Many different aspects
to
it. You mentioned that when you were competing in the US, you know, the people and society in general are generally more accepting of female bodybuilders as, you know, compared to here in Malaysia. Yeah. Do you think Malaysian guys are intimidated by you?
The ones that don't go to the gym, probably. but the ones that go, you know, does weightlifting, or the ones who compete, probably have a much better appreciation for the way I look, because they know what it entails,
right,
and the hard work
hard
that
work.
Goes in it. Mm. But for someone who doesn't go to the gym at all, do any kind of weightlifting, probably look at me and go, why would she want to take her body to that extent? And that's not how they would want their wives or their girlfriends to look like, you know. So then, yeah, you know, there'll be intimidation there.
What is the most, you know, biggest misconception about female bodybuilding that you've come across?
Actually, there's quite a few. They'll look at you and they'll think that you're a guy. I've had that. I've had people, you know, think that it's just a man dressed up like a woman. And secondly, they think that just because you look muscular, you have got to be on
drugs,
substances,
right,
and all that. You know, they don't know. They don't take into account how much work that's involved, you know, how long I've been doing this. You know, you don't see the day-to-day struggle that we go through, the meal preparation that we do. We don't just eat out because, you know, it's a convenient thing to do, you know. So things like that, you know, I think the public is not very, very aware of that. You know, we have to lift quite a bit just to look the way we do, you know. And just because we are muscular, it doesn't mean that
that you're less feminine.
Yeah, we are less feminine. You know, that is what it is. You know, we can still rock in a very nice dress and with heels and all that. It's just that, you know, we chose to to us, we feel that muscle is sexy, you know. But then, of course, there are girls that who are obviously overdoing it, where, you know, they look worse than a man, you know. That, to me, I think is crossing the line. And okay. That is also one of the reasons why women bodybuilding is getting less and less popular these days, you know, because a man can appreciate a woman who is athletic looking and has muscles, but not to the extent where your face and your body, you know, it's just, there's no femininity anymore in that. So that, I think, is crossing the line.
Okay. Is that the line that you can clearly know?
I think so, because, you know, of course you will see as you get more muscular, you have pictures, you know, we all have pictures of how
like
we
a progress
look,
picture.
You know, yeah, progress right, pictures right. before how we look when we started and then how we look today. So, you know, you will see, of course, you know, as you change, you know, like, you know, sometimes you'll get more muscular and you'll look harder, but it's still acceptable, you know. But then there are some girls that, if you ever watch the Olympia, there are some girls that just completely, you know, they make a man looks more feminine than them. So when you reach that point and, you know, okay. you have arms bigger than the size of a man, and, you know, you have neck thicker than men, you have some of them have forearms 2 times the size of a forearm in a man to equal one of theirs, you know, neck that is so thick, you know, things like that. So when you reach that point, you yourself know that, okay, you know, this, you have already crossed the line. So, you know, that would be
some of the signs.
Right.
In your 20-odd year career so far, what has been the most rewarding part for you?
You know, what I went through in 2016 was probably by far the most difficult journey for me, my fitness journey, because there was a lot of mistakes made and not knowing if I had enough time to correct the mistakes. And I wanted that third victory so badly, you know. And I remember feeling so uncomfortable weeks leading up to the prep because of that change in the diet. I was basically running out of time because of the mistakes I made. Everything had to be double, the training, you know, so putting on extra work on top of the, you know, strenuous activity that I already have as it is, but just so that I'm able to catch up with the time loss and to make sure I peak out on time. You know, I remember I was at the point of giving up. I had pulled out many, many times. And I think had it not been for my fiancé, probably, you know, I would say he had to be my pillar of strength. And those were like my darkest days, you know. I remember he told me, you know, this is not the Lillian I know. The Lillian I know never gives up, you know, that you will see yourself through this. No matter whether you're going to win or not, you go through this and you do the best you can and you try to cross the finishing line with class. So that was what he taught me. And I think those words kind of really got me through. And it was, I think I scraped through, you know. But to me, I could have done a lot better. But looking back at the pictures, everybody thought it was the best ever, you know, in all my years of competing.
That's great.
So that it was like almost giving up and wanting something so bad, you know. And I know had I not followed through with it, I would not be able to live it myself. And then finally, you know, watching everything come in, you know, in place together for me and managed to seal that victory, that I think probably, yeah, and I think that year was the most difficult year as far as competition goes. It was a very stiff competition. We had the most competitors, so there was a lot of call-outs and comparison, and to be able to stand amongst the best and beat them definitely went down in my books as the most rewarding.
That was Lillian Tan, our very own bodybuilding champion, who just this month claimed her 4th World Bodybuilding and Physique Sport Championship in Chiang Mai. And that was the first of 2 episodes recounting our favorite features and stories of the year. If you'd like to check out the podcast, head over to our website www.bfm.my. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do tweet us. We're at BFM Radio. And also, don't forget to download our latest app for free via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Daryl Ong. You have been tuning into Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Happy New Year, and join us again next week right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.